We once more welcome you again to this public hearing. And our presenter will be from Sebelele Foundation. And then your name is?
Pinky.
Pinky Numa.
That's correct.
Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you. Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister, members of the committee, and everyone in attendance today, good afternoon. I would like to open with these words from the former Deputy President of South Africa, Nkunzile Mlambo-Ngcuka, who is now the Executive Director of the United Nations Equity for Gender, Equality and Empowerment of Women. And I quote, "Women do not benefit enough. If the inputs men have access to, if the support that men can get when they are involved in agriculture, for example, if the same support was given to women, there is a figure that says more than 8 million people would be taken out of poverty." Unquote. My name is Pinky Numa, and I'm representing Ikabelele Foundation. It is a charity organization that is currently focusing in the rural areas, and it was initiated to create awareness of social ills and to promote the empowerment of women and children, amongst other things that we deal with. Ikabelele Foundation appreciates the commitment of the Women, Children, and People with Disability Ministry of ensuring that the agenda of empowering women and gender equality is not just spoken about, but it is implemented and actioned. And it is through discussions of this nature that we'll be able to advance that agenda. While we appreciate the effort, we feel that the consultation processes do not accommodate women in the deep rural areas to participate in this discussion. We would like to encourage the department to take time and visit the rural areas to ensure that the views, aspirations, and goals of women in rural areas are incorporated. Speakers have presented, and we are not going to, you know, echo or repeat things that have been noted and addressed. We are just going to raise some key issues that we feel were not taken into consideration. And one of those issues is young women. The bill focuses on women in general and does not accommodate young women in particular. Even though discrimination by age is mentioned, we think there is a need in some areas to make specific mention of how young women will benefit. Because we understand the fact that, and it is a reality, that young women find it difficult to find space, even amongst women. I work in a private employment organization. And you find that in certain instances where my superior is superior even by age, my views and my voice do not get taken into consideration. And it does not only happen in the private sector. It happens all over. It happens in community. It happens even in the rural areas where a woman or a girl or a young woman cannot go to various places to address, you know, certain things because of the very fact that they are seen to be young and inexperienced. And therefore, we would like for the ministry to take into consideration and also to emphasize young women in the bill. Safety and security, number two. The bill does not mention safety and security measures in both the formal and informal occupation. While we're focusing on eliminating discrimination by gender, the reality is there are occupations that are unsafe and risky for women and therefore we feel that necessary measures must be considered to accommodate women. And where we want to empower women into these positions, we want to ensure that the various public and private sectors understand what is required of them, you know, when they are even elevating women. And the last thing that we took note of in the bill is that the bill seems to put emphasis in economic empowerment through formal employment. And I noted this particularly in Section 10, 3D, where I recommended in our submission that it should read in the form that it says facilitate business, employment, and access to markets. It currently reads facilitate employment opportunities. It is not every woman who seeks to be employed formally. Some women want to be independent. Some women want, you know, the opportunity to find out what it is, what is their skill, what is, you know, their area of expertise, and not necessarily have to be working from 8 to 5 for somebody else. And therefore, we think that the bill should be able to, you know, should accommodate that. And more than anything else, the Belele Foundation is excited that finally there is a bill that is being considered that is directed at women. But as excited as we are about this bill, we would appreciate for the efforts to be placed in implementation, monitoring, and the evaluation of the impact once the bill is implemented. Many acts have been implemented in South Africa that support the intention of this bill, but they are not effective. And therefore, we are saying we are for this bill. However, we are saying implementation is key to the success of the bill. And in closing, my address is to the women in this room representing various organizations. The economic emancipation, empowerment, and equality of women is dependent on us to succeed. Government can introduce and implement as many laws in our favor. But if we are not willing to work hand in hand with them, acknowledge and help each other, we will forever be disadvantaged. Because the reality of the fact is that we ourselves against women, we discriminate against each other. We do not wait for men to discriminate against us, but we discriminate against each other. Therefore, men are not holding us back as women, but we are holding ourselves back. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Pinky Numa. Are there any questions of clarity? If not, thank you very much. We appreciate your presentation. The next presenter will be Women's Legal Center.
Good afternoon.
Oh, okay.
To the chairperson and the committee, the minister, and all protocol observed. I'd like to thank the committee very much for giving us this opportunity to make a presentation today. The Women's Legal Center is a charity, but we're also an independent law center. And effectively what we do is we litigate for the advancement of women's rights with a focus on women who have been historically, socially, and economically disadvantaged. We are also interested in law reform, and as a result, we are here today to make submissions in relation to the legislation. At the outset, we would like to say that we appreciate the political will that is evidenced by the presentation of a bill dealing with gender equality. In many cases in our country, we talk about doing something, but we never actually put our money where our mouth is and try and do something. So I think that it is well-intentioned, and it shows that we are trying to address gender inequalities in our country. And let us not forget that the gender inequalities in our country are amongst the highest in the world. As you all know, we have levels of gender-based violence that are the highest of a country not at war in the world. We have a stubbornly aggressive criminal justice system which fails women in every aspect of trying to prosecute crimes against them, sexual violence and domestic violence, which they face at such alarming rates. We have radical and skewed gender dimension of poverty and unemployment. Women are the poorest of the poor. They are concentrated in the unemployed and informal sectors with no access to benefits and security of formal employment. Women do not have access to land. Rural women face exclusions and culturally enforced exclusions which diminish their access to justice. Sex workers' human rights have not yet been recognized. We have high levels of hate crimes against LGBTI communities. We have gender discrimination in the workplace, which is rife. We have sexual harassment complaints coming to our office on a daily basis. And, of course, we know that HIV and AIDS spread has a gendered nature to it as well. Women are predominantly affected and infected by HIV/AIDS. It is thus a huge undertaking to bring about gender equality in South Africa. And in addition to that, women are not a homogenous group. We vary in race, class, culture, creed, religion. And we have different needs and would see substantive equality in different ways. And I think at the outset, we'd like to note that a bill that seeks to undertake such a huge task using the law should consult with women of all those different multiple and intersecting grounds. And we feel that you need to start at day one of a woman's life and look at all the different aspects that can affect her before you are able to talk truly about what substantive equality is in South Africa. So being lawyers, our starting point is inevitably the Constitution. And I think we all understand that gender equality is not negotiable. It is enshrined in the Constitution, and it is a vision, a value of our democracy that we strive so hard for and believe so highly, think so highly of. Section 9 contains the right to equality, and it also contains a positive obligation on the state to realize that equality. So that is the challenge which I think we are seeking to address, and to find legislation or draft legislation to do that is an insurmountable task. I think even, you know, looking at it, I was quite overwhelmed by it. A note of caution is that no matter how well-intentioned any piece of legislation is, it's not worth the paper it's written on if it can't be implemented. So whatever we do with legislation to bring about equality, we can't have another law that isn't being implemented and doesn't make real changes in women's lives. We're going to deal briefly just with three aspects of the bill. The one is the oversight and enforcement powers. The second is the definition of gender equality, and the third is the overlap with existing legislation. And as I've mentioned, we have a number of laws dealing with equality for women, and this committee itself has had hearings into whether or not some of those laws are being implemented and what the difficulties are. I come this morning from the Commission of Inquiry in Khayelitsha, where they were talking again of the difficulties that police face on a daily basis, some of them carrying 180 dockets at a time compared to an area like Muizenberg where they only have 15. So I think we need to be aware, very aware when we create law of the people on the ground who have to implement it. It's very important then what the machinery is or the structure is that is in place in our country to look at the oversight of whether or not we're achieving gender equality. And I'm later going to be presenting on behalf of Ms. Vetten, but her submissions deal with the gender machinery, and so I'm not going to go into that in detail. From a legal point of view, what is crucial to note is that for what the Constitution envisages for an oversight mechanism is an independent body. So when we're looking at oversight, we need to be aware of the legislation which sets up the Commission for Gender Equality and which gives it the power to do monitoring, researching, education, lobbying, advising, and reporting on the achievement of gender equality. We can't have an overlap between the ministry, any new structure, and the CGE. We need to jealously guard the independence of the oversight body that does that function. In terms of the Equality Act, the sections which have been enacted the Equality Court can already order the audit of policies and practices that are discriminatory. It can order directives to make progress reports to departments and government bodies and private bodies, and it can order implementation of special measures. We have this in the Equality Court, in the equality legislation, and it's not being utilized as we speak. I think we need to look at how we can utilize those remedies which are there already in law. Chapter 5 of the Equality Act has not yet been enacted, but it actually provides for extensive powers for the CGE and the Human Rights Commission in consultation to call ministers to implement measures within available resources which are aimed at the achievement of gender equality, to prepare and implement equality plans in a prescribed fashion and lodge these with the Human Rights Commission within 2 years, and to consult with the Commission on gender equality when making plans as to how they're going to achieve equality. That's already in our legislation, and it hasn't been enacted, and I'm not aware of what the reason is. Having said that we need an independent oversight body, we do need a place where the efforts of government to achieve gender equality are held accountable, where the state is held accountable by itself in its response to gender equality. And in that scenario, we actually see that this bill has taken away some of the enforcement mechanisms which were in an earlier version and now runs the risk of not being strong enough on enforcement mechanisms and not being able to hold accountable for implementation. I did a brief look at the French bill. They're also passing legislation which will bring about empowerment of women. And some of their penalties are quite strict. They're heavy fines, and they also, you'll be banned from getting state tenders and state work if you don't comply with some of the requirements. So those are things I think we can look at fitting into our employment equity legislation in relation to women. We'd like to submit that the oversight, that the accountability power should be in the Office of the President. That is where there is sufficient power to call other departments to account without creating a super ministry, which is probably unconstitutional. So that is our recommendation in that regard. In relation to the definition of gender equality, we appreciate the attempt to codify it or to put it, spell it out in detail. Having had experience in court of cases dealing with equality, what it means, and when there is discrimination, we like to caution against that, purely because when you codify, you cannot predict every situation which will arise, and you limit and narrow the definition of gender equality, taking away the discretion of the court and actually limiting the constitutional right, which is contained in Section 9. The Constitutional Court has developed a test that they use to decide when there's inequality. They look at whether there's differentiation, they look at whether it's on the grounds of gender, and they look at whether it's unfair. If it's unfair, they look at whether it's justified in terms of the Constitution. That is wide enough for the Equality Court and the Constitutional Court to look at whether or not there's discrimination on the basis of gender, and would be concerned if we limited that in any way. We also have a concern of the binary nature of the definition, the man, woman, the boy, and the girl, because it excludes gender non-conforming people. And the Equality Act has recently been amended to actually include intersex people in their definitions, and yet here we seem to be moving a bit backwards in our understanding of what gender is. In relation to the duplication of legislation, you would be aware of the Employment Equity Act. There are provisions in the Employment Equity Act which seek to bring about the empowerment of women and black women. An easy amendment one might consider there is to strengthen the enforcement mechanisms and possibly to take account of the multiple forms of discrimination that women suffer, to look at weighting so that I, as a white woman, would not necessarily get the same affirmative action treatment as a black woman would, but a white man would get less than me, so that one could look at the different intersecting forms of discrimination. The broad-based Black Empowerment, Economic Empowerment Act also makes provision for the empowerment of women, and adding women in there would also be an easy amendment to do. So I think our argument is that there's a lot of legislation dealing with equality. One would probably need to do an audit of all that legislation, look at all those sections, and see what they're covering, what the gaps are, and how they're being implemented, before one is able to do a wedgie bill as is proposed here. And finally, we'd like to ask if there is an opportunity that we do have consultations on a wider level and on a national basis with women in all areas to look at the gaps that are identified by an audit that is held in regard to the legislation. And I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to make submissions.
Thank you very much for your presentation, honourable members. Anything to engage with the Women's Legal Centre? And if not, let me once more thank you for your presentation. Our next, you will come back again after Vets Institute, is it? Okay. We will now get a presentation from the Business Women's Association of South Africa. Ms. Amandi Bosa.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Minister, and members of the committee. And thank you very much for the opportunity for us to present our submission to this committee. I represent the Business Women's Association of South Africa, and it is the voice of women in business in South Africa. It's existed for 30 years. We support women entrepreneurs' growth and development. We support women who are employed formally. We, you know, any woman who's trying to put a hand in business, we have as members. We actually do have entrepreneurs, corporate members, professionals, and senior decision makers as part of our membership. We run programs and initiatives to measure, advocate, and promote participation of women in the mainstream economy. So for us, seeing women develop economically is a very important part of what we do. So we were very happy to see that the wedgie bill was presented. We wholeheartedly support the principles and objectives underlying the bill. It's just that we believe that the bill requires a number of changes. Very often, as part of the work that we do, we encounter women, business women or entrepreneurs or women in corporates who are trying, who have failed to move up or to achieve what they've set out to do in their business simply because of the inequalities that are inherent in the system. Every year, the Business Women's Association conducts a census of women on boards in South Africa. And we have seen that the curve is quite straight. It's stagnant. We've had 3.7% women representation on boards in South Africa for the past 3 years. And when the changes do come, they usually are negative. So we believe definitely there's a lot that needs to be done to change situations like that. What we question is whether a bill is what is going to help achieve that kind of situation. Because as we can see, there is quite a lot of legislation. I mean, there's the Employment Equity Bill that should have actually seen to that if it was working. So the effectiveness of the legislative framework that we have right now is perhaps what one needs to question. But I just want to present, I know that a lot of the things that we have, the issues that we have with the bill have been mentioned again and again. So I'll try my best not to repeat too much what has been said. But we believe that the bill does require a number of changes, and to make it more effective, it needs to be targeted and perhaps focused on gaps in the current legislative framework, rather than start repeat or creating something anew. It should give effect to the constitutional right to gender equality and through clear measures which are resourced and capable of enforcement. We believe that enforcement, the issue of enforcement, is a very key here, because the laws that do exist, if they've been enforced, we should not really have a problem. We should not be talking, shouldn't be sitting here talking about how we should advance women in this country. But here we are, and we're just hoping that maybe 10 years from now we won't be still having this discussion, and we will instead be perhaps patting ourselves on the back for the work that we've managed to achieve. One of the situations, because we do deal a lot with women in these various areas who are in businesses and corporates and what, we do look a lot at statistics, at work that has been done, that at figures that have been collected. And you'll find that around South Africa, there's so many bodies that deal with collecting data on women. And depending on which data you look at, you'll find a database that will show you that women are improving and another that will show you that women are so badly off or there's no change or whatever. What we feel is one thing that needs to be done in this country as far as data on women goes is to aggregate it. And probably this ministry is the best that I don't even want to call them a victim or whatever, but the best to do something like that, to make sure that you look at the different kind of data that's being collected on all aspects, be it on the violence of women, be it on economic growth, be it on, so that if the ministry is able to collect that data and aggregate it, I think we will have a more clear picture. I know it is a mammoth task, but it starts from one place and we can build on that. And this then gives us the start of an evidence base, because again, we can come up with so many laws, including this current one, the bill, but if we do not have an evidence base that is very strong, we might actually shoot ourselves in the foot. So evidence bases are very important for us as well. Okay. One of the principles, or what the BWA has looked at as well, is we've worked with the UN Women, and we've looked at, they've created what they call the UN Women's Empowerment Principles. Now, these principles are designed to basically uplift women in society. You have companies that have signed up to them, to the principle. There's a charter that you sign, and when you sign this charter, you commit your company or your organization to practice and implement the principles, which include things like leadership, promotion of gender equality, equal opportunity, inclusion and non-discrimination, health, safety and freedom from violence, education and training. They are quite a few aspects. There's seven principles that they go by, and we in fact would look at a way of finding guidelines of that sort, that we get companies or get organizations to start to implement, I think we would move a long way towards achieving what we want to achieve. Because as it is, one of the things that we again discovered dealing with a lot of these organizations, with a lot of the companies, is that they might not actually know what to do, how to go about solving this gender issue problem. And this we've, you know, you've gleaned from talking to CEOs, be they male or female. It's a structure. A business was structured in a way that was not, that did not have women as a source of employees or whatever. So a lot of what goes on in business today is structured to work for men and not necessarily to work for women, where to the point where you find that women are, or some companies take on flexi time just for women, just to say that, okay, because you're a mother, we're going to allow you to leave early so you can go pick up your children or whatever. You don't have to work the long hours that we do, and, yeah, we are being flexible. Then what happens once I've left to go pick up the children? That's when you have the important meetings, and I'm excluded. So systems are, the businesses are structured that way, and I could give so many different examples on that, but basically, I think we need to look at how we change structures like that. And I don't, again, I'm not sure that the route is legislation. It could be that we could be talking to these organizations better, or sensitizing them, or providing guidelines, because guidelines are not things that they actually do. So if we go specifically to look at the bill, we believe that the bill needs to provide clear and progressive measures on enterprise development, supply chain, and marketing practices, starting in the public sector. Some of the things that we come across are these. When you go talk to organizations and ask them, how come we don't see women, number one, on your board? Number two, how come you're not supplied by women? They will come and tell you, we can't find the women. So I don't know, women, where you're hiding, but they cannot find you to give you business or to elevate you onto the boards. So again, I believe that these are some of the aspects that we need to look at. Why can they not find the women? When you ask why, what is it that you're looking for? I mean, this also involves funding organizations. You go to a funding organization.
Sorry, Chairperson. I think visitors in Parliament are not allowed to take photos, especially during proceedings.
Sorry. What we would like to suggest as well is perhaps a different kind of engagement as well. Again, it's providing guidelines, it's having dialogue, it's discussing what is holding us back. And it could be legislated, but I think even before it's legislated, we need to find that information by holding dialogues with people who are in power of these businesses and who hold the structures that women aren't, where women are discriminated against. Okay. So one of the other things that we're suggesting is providing a framework for implementation and establishing the enabling provisions for resources to support the implementation of existing rights on equal opportunity, inclusion, and non-discrimination. Another one is establishing concise, efficient, and effective measuring and reporting mechanisms on gender equality and empowerment. Now, right now, I think measuring and monitoring are not so strong. In fact, this is how come we end up with not knowing exactly where we stand as far as women empowerment is going. But this adds up to, it links in very well with the data, that with the what we suggested in the beginning about collecting of data. If you do have sufficient data, you will know what to do with it, and it will help you measure. You will see whether you're moving forward, backwards, or whether you're stagnating. So that is measuring will be assisted a lot by that. Our general comments as well on the bill, the one is that it should address the gaps rather than duplicate existing legal rights. It should be constitutional. It should not contradict the Constitution, as it has been pointed out by certain people who spoke before me. It should be clear about the rights and obligations, and it should specify which body is obliged to comply. Right now, again, it's not very clear who is obliged to comply. And bill should seek to make incremental progress, focusing first on areas of great need, such as women enterprise and supply chain development, and to mobilize resources for existing provisions to improve safety and freedom from violence for women and girls. Okay. My specific comments on the bill, I think, have pretty much been slaughtered by everybody who came before me. So I don't know if I should repeat them, but it's the definitions, it's the education and training, the designated bodies where that is not clear. it's again designated bodies. We don't know what that really is, and we'd rather have more clarity on that if the, when the bill goes back or when it's being reconsidered. So I would like then to conclude with some comments. So to improve the bill, what we suggest is disaggregation, or rather aggregation of data. Let's get our facts first. Let's understand what the situation is with women and then move from there. So let us gather the information that is out there on women in all aspects of our lives. The international obligations and instruments that are referred to in the bill must be included directly into the text if they're applicable. Designated bodies should be defined. The formulation of targets should be reflective of the substantive equality with due regard to the demographics of the relevant pool of people. Again, this refers to the 50-50. We can't really legislate 50-50 if we're not able to reach 50% of women in certain pools where they don't exist. Planning, reporting, and monitoring provisions should be streamlined and consolidated so that they can be used effectively for quantitative and qualitative monitoring and with minimal regulatory burden. So again, we should try and limit the burden that we put on businesses, for example, as far as monitoring and evaluating, and perhaps look at how else we can achieve that. Resourcing, enforcement, and consequences for non-compliance should be clarified and strengthened to achieve the objectives of the bill, because currently the non-compliance, if I don't comply, it doesn't seem like there's much that will happen to me. So I think we need to strengthen that area as well. And all duplication with other existing laws should be removed, and all contradictions with constitutional rights should also be removed. Okay. And finally, what we believe is that the bill should be reformulated and submitted to NEDLAC with a focus on critical targeted areas. And that is our submission from the BWA. Thank you very much.
Bossa. Thank you very much. Honourable members, do you have anything? Any question, any comment? If not, thank you so much for your presentation. We will then allow this Institute for Social Economic Research. Are they here?
Thank you, Chair.
By the way, you
I'm putting on glasses and I'm becoming much thinner.
Okay.
And I'm now Lisa Beaton.
Okay.
And she's so much more eloquent than me, so please forgive me if I'm not as eloquent as she. She was unable to afford the flight, so she requested me to assist with her submissions. In relation to the bill, she's a gender researcher and she's now moved to Witzel. Her comments are as follows. There is a need for legislation and policy development to promote gender equality, but this needs to be informed by an analysis of the gaps in existing legislation and policy. It doesn't appear that such an analysis has been undertaken. The memorandum states that the proposed legislation does not aim to create new anti-gender discrimination legislation or additional mechanisms to enforce existing legislation and policies. So it neither addresses gaps in policy and implementation, nor gaps in implementation. Instead, the bill duplicates a number of existing pieces of legislation, and she gives examples which I think we've covered in many submissions. She points out that duplication would appear to increase the likelihood of non-implementation. Duplication also causes problems of harmonization, strains resources, and creates an administrative burden. Her recommendation is that we do analysis, remove the duplicate provisions, and mainstream the monitoring and evaluation of gender equality into the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation in the Presidency. She also calls for an investigation as to why Chapter 5 of PAPUDA has not been operationalized in a decade, and as to why Muslim marriages have not yet been recognized, why domestic partnerships have not yet been recognized in legislation, and what has happened to the proposed legislation in relation to adult prostitution. Then she talks about the gender machinery, where she points out that the introduction of the Department of Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities has fundamentally changed the nature of the national gender machinery. There was very little consultation about the significant change and what that means for the national gender machinery. The need to involve women's organizations in the national gender machinery was clearly stated from the outset when it was negotiated pre-constitution. No institutional mechanism has been created which caters for the participation of civil society within the national gender machinery, and this was meant to be done in terms of the national policy framework with and the Office of the Status of Women, who had that duty and was responsible for convening meetings with women and women's organizations. That has fallen away, and the department has no such similar obligation, with the result that it's rendered the participation of women's organizations ad hoc and discretionary rather than obligatory, which is ironic in the bill that seeks to legislate women's participation in decision-making. Section 19A of the bill does not address this lack of participation adequately, leaving both the establishment and composition of the institutional mechanisms to the minister's discretion. In effect, the de facto exclusion of women's groupings from the national gender machinery has been accomplished by the establishment of the department and is arguably further entrenched by the provisions of this bill. These changes to the composition and the functioning of the NGM represent significant policy shifts which have not been widely canvassed, particularly amongst the groupings affected by the policy change, notably women. The status and fate of the provincial remnants of the Office of the Status of Women is not clear, nor the roles and relationships of other gender structures sprinkled throughout the state, such as the DPSA and the local government structures, as well as provincial structures in the offices of the Premier. Were all these various parts to be spelled out clearly, there would be better implementation of existing law and policy. The recommendation is to consult around these significant changes to the national gender machinery, develop Section 15 in the bill to strengthen gender focal points, set out the powers and the functions of the Provincial Office on the Status of Women, if it is retained following the consultation, and consider creating a National Gender Machinery Council, which would house along the lines of NEDLAC, and it would institutionalize participation and include the private sector and women's groupings. It's also not correct to say that this bill does not need resources. Government audits show that every department does not have a gender focal person, for example, the DPSA audits. Employing gender focal persons will cost money. Elevating existing gender focal persons to senior management positions will cost money. Training government officials around gender mainstreaming will cost money. The implementation and costing of the bill needs to be reworked. Currently, the bill offers a hollowed-out response to the problem of gender inequality. To be made substantive, it needs to be informed by an analysis of existing gaps in legislation and policy, an analysis of what would strengthen implementation, and that is not necessarily always more law and policy. Only then should new law be written and its operationalization costed. Thank you for your indulgence, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Williams. I think you were the last one for today. We will resume again tomorrow, but let me just say that, you know, this has been a very interesting session, very interesting, and the different views and opinions that one got from different organizations, you know. And it's quite clear that the bill intention is appreciated, but there is a lot of work that has to be done before we can consider the bill. We do, however, acknowledge that, and I think we all agree, that there are a lot of pieces of legislation, you know, that have been put in place, but the challenge thereof is the implementation. I did indicate when I opened that after the public hearings, we are going to, the committee will sit with the department to deliberate on the issues together with the select committee, and thereafter a report will be compiled, which will then be taken to the NCOP before the finalization of the bill for interaction with provinces. I think I would like to thank the portfolio committee, honorable members, the minister and the department, and all those who participated in these deliberations. And our meeting is adjourned until tomorrow morning again at 9 for those who will be presenting. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.